Depression can make your heart ache, and depression can give you a heart attack.
That was Lawson Wilson, professor of psychiatry at University of Cincinnati, who is my guest today on Shrink Pod. From the campus of New York Medical College and the Behavioral Health Center at Westchester Medical Center in Valhalla, New York, I'm Dr. Michael Blumenfield, professor of psychiatry, and this is Shrink Pod. This podcast will bring to you information, commentary, and interviews with experts on topics in mental health and psychiatry. You can subscribe to receive this podcast on a regular basis, and your comments and suggestions are always welcome. My email address is shrinkpod@aol.com. And now for today's program. My guest today is Dr. Lawson Wilson, who is a professor of psychiatry and family medicine at the University of Cincinnati, where he's been teaching for the last 20 years, and his subspecialty is the area of psychosomatic medicine and primary care psychiatry. Welcome to Shrinkpod, Dr. Wilson.
Thank you, Dr. Blum.
Today we're going to talk about your new book titled Treating the Aching Heart, published by Vanderbilt University Press, A Guide to Depression, Stress, and Heart Disease. What made you decide to write this book, Dr. Lawson?
I think it's the best mind-body story that we have, and it's certainly the best story that psychosomatic medicine has to tell, because we know more about depression as a mental illness and heart disease as a physical illness than we do about any two other mental and physical illnesses that are connected. And the connection between the two has fascinating physiological dimensions, and it is a very important public health problem that most people don't know about.
Do you actually feel that depression can cause heart disease?
Well, that depends on how you understand the word cause. It'd be simplistic to say that any one thing can cause heart disease. You know, certainly hypertension by itself doesn't, smoking by itself doesn't, and depression by itself couldn't cause heart disease. But I firmly believe that depression is a major contributing factor to the development of heart disease in people who have significant depression over an extended period of time.
Therefore, by extension, then, depression is a significant factor in people who have heart attacks, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, what about some of the mechanisms which depression might contribute to someone having heart disease or having a heart attack?
I think the first mechanism to understand is a behavioral one. There is also a biological one. And the behavioral mechanism has to do with the behaviors, the high-risk behaviors that depression fosters that lead to heart disease. And there are four of them, really, that contribute to major risk factors for heart disease, and the first is physical inactivity. Depressed people tend to exercise less often, and this tendency towards physical inactivity contributes to heart disease. The second is obesity. Depressed people have higher rates of obesity, particularly through binge eating, and that, as you know, also increases the likelihood for developing heart disease. Smoking is much higher in depressed people, higher in frequency, and it is harder for depressed people to quit smoking. Smokers also have higher rates of depression. And then finally, the link between depression and diabetes. Eating habits and physical inactivity habits of the depressed people lead to their having higher rates of developing diabetes and higher rates of complications once they develop diabetes. So those four risk factors are tightly linked to the behaviors associated with depression.
So in this case, you would be saying that if someone can stop smoking and if someone could exercise more and get their diabetes under control, they'd be less likely to have heart disease, even if they were still depressed.
That's right.
But again, you're also saying that depression leads to diabetes and leads to smoking and leads to obesity.
Right, and so it is much harder to prevent these risk factors for heart disease from contributing to the onset of heart disease if you're depressed.
Okay, let's look at that, because I think some of our audience might not appreciate how depression, for example, can lead to diabetes, because I think the general thinking is, well, I understand what you're saying. I think the general thinking often is that people are born with a genetic predisposition to diabetes. You know, your parents have diabetes, it runs in the family, you tend to have it. And now you're saying that if you're depressed, you're more likely to get diabetes. Maybe you should explain how that works.
Yeah, well, it goes several ways. One is we have an obesity epidemic happening in this country, which means that people who are not genetically predisposed to developing diabetes but do get overweight develop a higher risk for contracting diabetes. And depression just accelerates that whole process. The other interesting fact about the biology of depression is that it makes it harder for people to control their glucose. And people with various kinds of biologically driven depressions actually have higher glucose levels and have harder time actually controlling their glucose and bringing their glucose down over time, and that puts them at greater risk for developing diabetes.
Are you saying if that latter group, if they actually took care of their depression, their glucose would be better regulated?
It would be better. It'd be easier for them to regulate not only their glucose levels, but also a lot of the habits that tend to make people develop diabetes, such as overeating, cravings for sweets, insomnia, lack of exercise.
Okay, well, let's say we have someone who's who says, well, look, I don't smoke, I don't have diabetes, I'm not obese, I exercise a lot. Does that matter if they're depressed? Is there if in addition to that they happen to be depressed, are you saying that they're going to be more likely to get heart disease even if they don't have those other risk factors that we just discussed?
No, and that's the good news. I think depression by itself is unlikely to lead to heart disease. It's depression that persists long enough to contribute to some of these other risk factors for heart disease. So depression in concert with some of these other risk factors can accelerate the whole process of developing heart disease. But most people with depression alone, who are doing lots of the other preventive measures, have a relatively little chance of developing heart disease.
Okay, let me put on my psychosomatic hat, since we're both psychiatrist colleagues, and
yes.
And sort of discuss that, maybe even try to debate that point a little bit. What about the fact that research has shown that a heart rate variability, in other words, let me explain, you know what I mean, of course, but that people normally, when they get excited, either emotionally or physically, their heart rate speeds up, and that's good for the heart. If you don't have that change in your heart rate, that's usually associated with heart problems. And apparently, depressed people don't have good heart rate variability. Were you familiar with that? Okay, under that, with that piece of research, it would suggest that there may be some connections that go beyond just the factors that you mentioned.
Exactly. So now we're moving from the behavioral pathway to the biological pathway.
Okay.
And one of the most fascinating dimensions of depression that you're alluding to is that depression disrupts the whole autonomic nervous system, which is in control of the automatic things like heart rate and blood pressure that we're usually oblivious to. And so one of the consequences of distress and an overactive stress response system that happens in the context of chronic depression is that the body's ability to automatically regulate heart rate and the variability of heart rate gets disrupted. The conductor is not conducting the symphony in harmony. And so the heart rate can suddenly get out of whack and doesn't self-regulate as well, and that often accounts for the vulnerability to sudden death, particularly in the vulnerable months after a heart attack.
Well, that would mean then, to get back to my original question, that somebody might not have diabetes, might not have obesity, and might exercise a lot, but because they're depressed, might they not have good heart rate variability and therefore be susceptible to heart disease, even though they didn't have those other risk factors?
Well, it is true that somebody who's depressed, who already has coronary disease, may have a much higher risk of dying after a heart attack because of this loss of heart rate variability. What's not clear is how long you have to have depression in order to develop heart disease in spite of a number of other risk factors. How many other risk factors have to be there for depression to be the sort of catalyst for developing heart disease?
So in other words, you're not certain that the research shows that the depression will cause in a normal heart it'll create that problem. You think it's only in the heart that's already damaged?
I think so.
Okay. Well, what about things like blood clotting and the ability of the of platelets to clot? Some people seem to think that depression makes it more likely that the blood will clot, and therefore more likely to have an occlusion.
Well, that's the other important biological pathway by which depression can accelerate the development of heart disease, so that the hardening of the arteries in the coronary arteries involves the development of blood clots and plaques around the parts of the coronary artery that are hardening. And depression has been shown both in animals and in people to increase the stickiness of platelets, which are the cells that form a lot of the clot. And treatment for depression, either through medications or psychotherapy or exercise, the recovery from depression returns those platelets to their proper level of stickiness. So it's very possible that depression contributes to the acceleration or progression of heart disease by making platelets more sticky and making the plaques more likely to throw clots.
Well, now, would that work because the treatment of depression makes the depression go away, or will it work because some of the antidepressants seem to have that quality that affect the platelets?
That's a good question for which we don't have the definitive studies yet. Most people think it works both ways.
Uh-huh, okay. What about how else would you describe the mechanism that the treatment works for depression? In other words, when we treat depression, what's happening that makes the risk for heart disease go down?
One thing that happens is behaviors change. People learn to be able to eat better, sleep better, exercise better. I think biology changes so that we can regain heart rate variability, better control of our inflammatory system so that we have less inflammation going on in the coronary arteries. Depression promotes chronic inflammation, and that's not good. I think there's some mysterious dimensions that we don't understand, such as how hope translates into better health, and people who get treatment or recover from depression regain their hope and regain meaning for life. But it certainly happens on many levels. It's not enough to just take a medicine or just do exercise or just do psychotherapy.
Okay, well, mentioning hope is kind of interesting. And, of course, the opposite of hope might be despair. I remember reading an article not too long ago in the New England Journal called The Broken Heart Syndrome. It had to do with sudden onset of cardiac symptoms. And earlier you mentioned sudden death. Do you think there's anything to this, that sudden death might be related to some kind of a bad news situation, somebody getting bad news, somebody breaking up with them, or having a loss, someone dying, could cause some kind of a broken heart syndrome that could lead to some serious cardiac problems?
No question about it. And these are the most dramatic examples of the influence that the central nervous system has on the cardiovascular system. The article that you're referring to in the New England Journal, I think, documented a substantial number of cases at Mass General Hospital in which there was clear evidence of toxicity to the muscle of the heart attributed to excessive levels of adrenaline circulating in the body. And the presumed mechanism is that when people get extremely excited, challenged, or threatened, their adrenal glands can secrete enormously high levels of adrenaline to the point of the adrenaline becoming toxic to the muscle. And so it looks like a heart attack in terms of symptoms, but the muscle doesn't die. It becomes stunned, as it were, and behaves like a heart in heart failure for a matter of several days. But hospitalization usually calms down the person and relieves the sense of threat, and within a week or two, the heart is back to normal, and the person is functioning, and there's no evidence of a heart attack. So it's a bit of a mystery that is only just now being well explained on a mechanism level, and it's just the most dramatic example of how shock or surprise or elation in people with vulnerable hearts can lead to sudden death or a heart attack or an arrhythmia.
This kind of leads us to a dilemma, doesn't it? In other words, how do families and doctors approach the situation where someone has heart disease and they have to be given some bad news?
Yes, very tough. And it makes us makes the consequences of doing it badly sometimes quite dire. But it's important to remember.
What's the right way to do it?
Well, I think that's going to vary a lot from person to person. I think it's important to remember that what's most striking is how resilient the heart is, and that most of the time we all go through enormous shocks without suffering this broken heart syndrome or dying or having arrhythmias. And I think the right way to do it will depend on knowing what gives a person a sense of safety. Providing them that sense of safety before laying on the bad news. And that may be having the right people around, it may be having the right medication around, it may be breaking the news in slowly, maybe doing it in various stages in order to monitor how well this person is coping.
You know, I see another potential problem with understanding this data, and that is that people have the possibility of feeling guilty if they have heart disease, and they're going to feel that they caused it by their own inability to deal with their depression.
Well, that is a possibility that is analogous to the kind of guilt that people would feel about not having managed their weight or their blood pressure or their smoking. I think as we understand that depression can contribute to the whole progression of heart disease, it does become both an opportunity for recovery as well as an opportunity for guilt.
You and I last met in person at the meetings of the American Academy of Psychosomatic Medicine at its recent annual meeting. And I'm wondering if you might want to say a few words about the subspecialty of psychosomatic medicine.
Sure. The subspecialty of psychosomatic medicine received its authorization or certification as a subspecialty, I believe it was 5 or 6 years ago. It's the branch of psychiatry that takes special interest in people who have simultaneous psychiatric and medical illness or have substantial psychological consequences of medical illness, and so it requires clinicians who are particularly familiar with medical illness and psychiatric illness and can deliver mental health services in coronary care units, burn units, hospitals, outpatient clinics, cancer centers. I think it's a very promising subspecialty because it can provide the integration of mental health care and primary care in a way that really has not happened in traditional American medicine. And patients want it. I think it's cheaper, and it makes better clinical sense to treat mental disorders in the context of physical disorders and vice versa.
Yes, and if people would like more information about it, the website of the Academy of Psychosomatic Medicine is www.apm.org. That's apm.org. And certainly if you'd like more information about this fascinating subject on the relationship between depression and the heart, I think Dr. Lawson's book, Treating the Aching Heart, A Guide to Depression, Stress, and Heart Disease, is a great place to go. The book is published by Vanderbilt University Press. I assume it's available on Amazon and other outlets like that.
And it's also available through my website, which is also a site for more public education.
Oh, yeah, please give us the site.
Which is www.lawsonwulfsin.com. That's LawsonWulfsin.com.
Okay, and we'll also put that as part of this podcast. Lawson, I'd like to thank you so much for joining me on Shrink Pod today, and I'll look forward to seeing you in the near future.
Michael, thank you very much for having Shrink Pod for the rest of us.
You have been listening to Shrink Pod, which has been coming to you from the campus of New York Medical College at the Behavioral Health Center of Westchester Medical Center in Valhalla, New York. This program is supported by a grant from the Sidney E. Frank Foundation. I'm Dr. Michael Blumenfield, wishing you a pleasant good day.